All right, welcome back to Lindroth Hockey Podcast. You're here with father and son duo and co-host Jim and Andrew Lindroth. Dad, how are you today?
Doing great, Andrew. Looking forward to this guest. It's another sort of branching out into the hockey world to cover more coaching and also some scouting. Can't wait to get into this one. But we do have a quick announcement, Andrew, right? That we've actually might have picked up our first real sponsor with Manscaped. Manscaped sent us basically all their products, and we're trying them out here and see if there's a possible deal for us. So we want to thank our listeners for following us to get Manscaped to approach us. We just got the products. We'll let you everybody know how we do.
And the promo code is all capitals Lindroth, LINDRTH. So we'll
All
be
right.
having reviews and things to talk about. So, but we're excited to announce a special guest today, Marlon Mueller. So Marlon began his coaching career in 1981 as an assistant coach for U York University, and then was coaching all in between until he landed his first real head coaching position at Ohio State or Ohio University, excuse me, 1984, and then later spent a year with Wilfrid Laurier University. From there, Marlon found his home for the next 10 plus years with the University of Guelph as the head coach from 1988 through 1999. And during that time, won Coach of the Year in 1996 and in 1994-97, won two Ontario University Hockey Championships, as well as a Canadian University National Championship in 97. He then spent the rest of his career as a head coach, most notably with the University of Wisconsin-Eau-Claire for 3 years, and University of Ontario Institution of Technology for six. He later finally retired from coaching in 2019, the same year Allan Cup Hockey presented him with Coach of the Year award, capping off an incredible 20-plus year coaching career. He has also been a scout for a long time, but most notably with Neutral Zone since their inception in 2015. And he also became Director of Ontario Scouting in 2017 and Director of Canadian Scouting in 2018. So there's a lot there. Marlon's been doing a lot in his whole career, a long time. We're excited to talk to him. So without further ado, welcome our special guest today. Marlon, how are you today, sir?
Hey, I'm doing very well. Thanks for having me.
Boy, that's already one heck of a resume there. Pretty long too,
Well, I've been at it a long time. Well,
eh?
lucky to stay in the game. Lucky to stay in the game as long as I have.
Go ahead, Andrew.
So just to kind of piece together the beginning of your story here, Marlon. So you got your undergrad degree, from what I understand, from York University. So help us connect the story. How did you get into coaching? And obviously, if timeline matches up right, or shortly after you graduated, you got your first job at the same university. So how did that all connect and work out together?
Yeah, so it was funny. When I was 18, thinking I was on my way to university for business, and I had been coaching youth hockey at that time, and just out on one of those university days where you go and visit a bunch of different universities all at a local high school, I happened to walk into Wilfrid Laurier's presentation, and they mentioned physical education if you wanted to have coaching as a career. And I really didn't know I could have coaching as a career, and it was just an epiphany moment for me. So I said, hey, that's what I want to do. So I went to work getting my phys ed degree, all with an eye all the time on becoming a Canadian university hockey coach.
So just after a year or so assistant coach, you make that jump to head coach with Ohio University. How did you manage to get that head coaching job?
Yeah.
And with only a little bit of coaching experience, what
Well,
was that like?
again, they say that success is when preparation meets opportunity. I just finished my degree. I had known of one player up in Canada who had gone down to Ohio University to do a master's degree. So I decided I wanted to do my master's degree, and I called down to Ohio hoping that they had room for an assistant coach. And when I called down there, the hockey faculty member Jim Gilmore mentioned to me that their head coach had just resigned the week before, and it had kind of caught them by surprise, and they were looking for a head coach. And they said, how soon can you come down here and interview? And a week later, I was the head coach at Ohio University. So,
Wow.
talking about just being in the right place at the right time, and that kind of kick started and got me going on my career.
So it's not like you were initially looking or applying for a head coaching position. It just kind of just the way things worked out. So your first year as a head coach, what was your biggest like eye opener? What was the biggest like, oh crap, I didn't realize this as an assistant coach, you'd have to do this as a head coach?
Well, I guess the hardest thing that what I had to be, careful of is a lot of the players were my age. I mean, I accepted the position there. I was 23 years old. So, you know, the biggest juggling act was kind of being the same age, being a kind of a, like a, maybe a friend, big brother, but also having to be the hockey coach and, you know, lay the law down and be a disciplinarian. So it's, I was very fortunate, to be given that opportunity and to be given those challenges I did. And it's helped me my entire career.
Andrew, take the next one.
So you spent just 2 years with York University as a head coach, and then you moved on to assistant coach for a year, then right back to head coach, University of Guelph in 1988. That's when you first started getting into your first year with who you're going to be with for the next 10 years. So how did that opportunity come about? Did you know that this would be a place that you'd be building a program for over a decade, or did that kind of just happen eventually?
Again, guys, I either lucked in or I was surprised in, but I had the University of Guelph coach call me. I had been at Wilfrid Laurier for 2 years as an assistant and was looking to get some new experience. And he called me, he said he was looking for an assistant. So after talking with him and the athletic director, I made the move to Guelph as an assistant. Well, a month later, it was June, I got a phone call from the head coach who said, well, Marlon, I've just been granted a year's leave of absence and you're the head coach. So,
wow.
You know, he never came back, decided to go and stay gone. And I guess I had done enough, you know, decent work that the athletic director decided to give a young guy like myself a shot at the full-time position. And again, very fortunate, but I was there 11 years and it was the best, it was bar none the best hockey job I ever had. I loved it there.
As mentioned in your introduction, you won several championships, Coach of the Year award. Talk to us about that time, or maybe even a specific year that was most special to you.
Well, okay, first, let me address the Coach of the Year, because, you know, the funny thing about Coach of the Year is you usually win it when you do the least amount of coaching. I mean, you're like guys, I won it, the year we win a Canadian championship and our team was so very good. All I remember ever talking to my team about was saying, change them up, change them up. The year you never get considered for Coach of the Year awards are with your worst teams, where you have to literally coach your ass off just to stay competitive, and you never get the recognition. So, you know, I don't have a whole lot to say about Coach of the Year. Some of the best coaches are the guys that just are struggling to be 500, you know? Yeah. So I'll have that to say, but the other thing I say is when you do win the awards, it's great players that win you those awards, great players making great plays and winning games. That's who, that's who wins you Coach of the Year awards. So take that with a grain of salt.
Okay. So in 1999, during that final year with the university, you served as the head coach as well for Team Canada at the World Student Games, I believe, in Slovakia, where you guys ended up defeating the Russians to win the bronze medal. Talk to us about that opportunity. I assume that one kind of came crazy too with the rest of your stories.
Yeah, it was, what a great experience, like unbelievable to go to Slovakia and play, you know, represent Canada internationally. The team that beat us to eliminate us from playing for the gold medal was a team out of the Ukraine, Kiev, and it was their pro team because they were the student games, and this was a, you know, Ukraine being very military. They enrolled all of their pro team in military courses and came to the student games. So they beat us 2-0 and denied us the opportunity to play for gold. But I'll tell you, like, great game, and I'd never trade that experience for anything. They were a good team. And then I'm watching the Russians play before we play them for the gold medal. And I'm telling you, they were practicing at a tempo and tic-tac-toe. And I'm going, holy jumping Jesus, these guys are going to kick the hell out of us. And we got playing the game, and it's 0-0 with a minute left in the first, and they go on the power play, and we score two shorthanded goals to take a 2-0 lead. And guys, I got to tell you, they just quit. They quit.
Wow.
Really? Was, you know what? The second and third period were so easy to play. It's just like, you know, those two shorthanded goals took the life out of them, and we just carried on and won the bronze. And, you know, I remember saying to my guys, like, you know, back in 99, the Canadian-Russian rivalry was not quite like it was in 1972. There were so many more countries that were rivals in 99. But I said to my guys, I said, look, I know you're disappointed not getting to play for the gold, but we're playing the Russians for the bronze. I said, right. and it's a medal. And I said, and there's no team your dads would rather see you guys beat than the Russians. So
right.
Quit crying about your loss to Kiev and get ready to play the Russians. And that kind of, you know, gave our guys a nice little focus because, of course, everybody, you know, appreciates how much your mom and dad do for you in your minor hockey. So we played that game for our dads.
So let me ask you this. So between the first period and second period, from the Russian side, you as a coach looking at the Russian side, obviously the players quit, but did the coaches quit? Like, could they have done something? I mean, what does a coach do? You've got two periods or two intermissions to get things back on track. What do you think happened, or what should have happened? Or,
well, it's a game of momentum, and I'm sure their coaches didn't quit. And I was scared to death because I thought, oh, after we scored two shorties, now we've pissed them off. Now they're really going to come at us. Yeah. But early in the third, we scored again. And hockey is a game of momentum, you know, and that's why anybody can beat anybody on a given day. It's who takes advantage of the momentum when it's your turn. And I think when we scored that third goal, that's when, you know, had they made it 2-1, I think they would have found some life and it would have been a much better game.
Yeah.
But we scored to make it 3-0, and they went, okay, this is not our day. And we coasted from there.
Wow. So after you move on from university, you end up moving to America, I believe, for the first time. I know that when we had talked off air, there were some other little gaps when you were coaching.
Yeah. Well,
that wasn't, you know, quite mentioned.
2 years in Athens, Ohio for my master's, but then back in 99, I moved back to Wisconsin. So I'd come back to Guelph, and then I took the job in Wisconsin at the University of Wisconsin, Eau Claire.
Yeah, so what made you want to leave University of Guelph after so long it moved to America?
Stagnation. You know, like, I'm a goal setter, and I had set goals for myself at Guelph, and that was to turn the program from a non-contender to a contender, and to hopefully compete for a Canadian championship, and we had won that. So it was time to make a move, and I was always curious about NCAA hockey. And so the position was open, and they offered me the job, and so my wife and I said, what the heck, let's make a move.
Any big differences between Canada college hockey and NCAA?
Yeah, they have their differences. I mean, number one, in the United States, all college sports is much more heralded than it is in Canada. You know, our football teams don't play in front of 100,000 people. Our football teams might play in front of 2,000 people. In Canada, we don't have hockey arenas of 4,000, 5,000, or 10,000. You know, our university rings hold 1,000 or two. So it just doesn't have the same stigma in Canada as it does the United States. They're much more passionate about their collegiate athletics in the United States. And, you know, I can tell you for sure, up here in Canada, we're very jealous about that.
That's pretty cool. Dad, you want me to take that next one?
Yeah, please.
So, Marlon, I want to jump to 2006, just because I'm curious where your life and your mind was at during this time. So you take a step away from coaching college, and you coach at for Port Perry Lumberjacks, and I believe it's the COJCHL, coaching some sort of junior league. What made you switch it up to a junior league after so many years of collegiate hockey? Just again, stagnation, just doing something different?
Yeah, well, I was living in Port Perry, and the general manager called me. Now I knew at that time that I was headed to the University of Ontario. But the University of Ontario, it was the year before they started their hockey program. So the junior team in my town called me and said, we know you're living in Port Perry. We know who you are. We got a pretty good junior team here, but we need a coach. Would you consider coaching? And I said, look, I've got a coaching gig lined up for a year from now, but if you don't mind, if I coach him for 1 year, it would probably help me getting back onto the ice after, you know, kind of a 4-year sabbatical or whatever it was, running practices and all of that stuff. So I jumped in there to my hometown junior team, and I got to tell you, it was so enjoyable. I mean, you know, these athletes aren't near as good as college athletes, obviously, but great attitudes, great work ethics. And, you know, I really cherished that year.
So like you just mentioned, you end up University of Ontario from 2007 to 13. Obviously, this is like another pretty long stint there. Talk to us a little bit about the program and your thoughts there.
Well, that's a real tough one, because the University of Ontario Institute of Technology was Canada's first, or Ontario's first new university in 50 years.
Really?
So you go out and recruit hockey players, and number one, the kids and the moms and dads, very few of them know anything about the university. And number two, you've got no hockey history. So from a recruiting standpoint, it was the toughest recruiting job I've ever had. And I knew that going in. Don't get me wrong. I'm not whining here. I knew exactly what I was getting into and the challenges. But it was a very difficult job in that, you know, we had a lot of hurdles to overcome. But I was very proud of the players we got. You know, winning games, turning the team into at least a playoff contending team. And we had some good years there.
So final year of coaching, 2018-19 with the Whitby Dunlops. And you won here again. Was that a well-earned coach of the year, or was it like the other one?
No, I would say it was well-earned. I'll tell you this one, because the senior hockey is a league of ex-pros, guys that are on the way back down. And there were teams in our league that had former NHLers, former American Hockey League players. And our caliber of player just was not at the level of our competition. But I will say, this was a scenario where I coached my ass off trying to keep us competitive. And I guess the rest of my colleagues at that level must have recognized that. So that's why I won Coach of the Year, because they felt sorry for me. I'm not sure.
Well, either way, it's on your resume. I'd take it, right?
That's right. Take the win, right?
So you've coached through a lot of generation of young hockey players. And it's kind of, we've had on associate coach from University of Wisconsin. We've had on other coaches that are, you know, been doing it a long time. And they talked a little bit about how it's more difficult now because a lot of the players aren't so focused because of social media, because they've got iPads. Just the way that the youth are communicating with each other are different than when you and I were communicating. Did you find that at all, that it was a little difficult to teach later on just because they're not? I mean, I'll say this, I'm a university professor, and some of the students have a tough time communicating in general with each other.
Yeah, I mean, people ask me all the time, do you miss coaching? And my typical answer is, look, I miss coaching in the 1980s and the 1990s. I don't miss coaching in the 21st century. The kids changed. But my feeling was social media, yes, and parents. And you know, the kids changed because the parents changed. And the biggest thing I found is that in the 80s and 90s, parents actually would send kids to you to play for you with the idea of you teaching them character, teaching them all the good components of team sport, and turning them into a man. So it was like parenting by community. Nowadays, the parents are only interested in their kids on ice development improvement. They're not interested in character. They're not interested in discipline. You're hard on their kid. The parent is mad at you. It's a whole different mindset. You know, they obsess more about the kid's sports coach than they do the kid's academic teacher. You know, and I got to, parents are going to be mad at me, but I'm telling you, most of you parents that might be listening to this, 98% of you get a little goofy as soon as your kid starts to exhibit some talent, you know, and you lose all focus of what the good things are that you can draw out of sport, and you get thinking that it's a pro career for them, and it's a pro career for so very, very, very few people. But that attitude has done damage to sport. And I look in the States and I look at this transfer portal BS and these guys that commit and then they don't commit and all of this crap. And you cannot tell me that sport is better because of us getting less structured and less firm in the way we approach things. Sport is not better.
Yeah, you raise a really good point. So without me butchering this by reading the last bit here. So in 2015, you become associated with Neutral Zone.
Yes.
Tell us a little bit about that, because then you go on and you become director of Canadian scouting. So just tell us a little bit about where you're at now.
Well, there's a couple of gentlemen out of Vermont, Steve Wilk and Brendan Collins. And Steve Wilk being the financial backer and Brendan Collins being the guy with the whole idea. And what he wanted was, hockey was getting so big, amateur hockey, and kids across the United States and Canada were going everywhere to play, not just around their hometown anymore, that he felt that there needed to be an amateur scouting system where people could trust would give a fair evaluation of a player, not because they were being paid by the parent or a team, but just because they were completely neutral, hence the name Neutral Zone. And so we wanted to provide data for higher education hockey and for higher level hockey. So it started out as an idea in 2015. We launched our website in 2016. It's been a grind, but I'll tell you what, we've grinded our way to the fact that we are the biggest and the best amateur hockey scouting agency in the world. You know, we've partnered with Elite Prospects. We put all the reports for the pro scouting software RinkNet. You know, our reputation has become incredible because of the leadership of Brendan and Steve and the passionate scouts we have in our system. It's been a great ride. I've had a lot of fun. I love the guys and I love doing what I'm doing.
So what does a typical day look like for you? Or is there a typical day?
There's no typical day. We certainly have busy times. I mean, you know, there's days where I go 2-3 days and I don't do anything for Neutral Zone. Then all of a sudden I'm on the plane, I'm out to Vancouver, I'm spending 4 or 5 days scouting and I'm back home and now you're writing reports. I don't write so many reports anymore because now as a director, you're more, it's more about hiring scouts, finding new talent, making sure that they're paid, that their travel's looked after, and that all of the tournaments and events we cover are looked after. So I'm still in the rinks a little bit, not as much as I was, but I'm responsible for about, I want to say, 35, 40 scouts that we have across Canada, and great guys. And, you know, I love the company. I love the scouts. It's been a blast.
What's the most difficult part about your job?
The hard part about scouting is the actual forecasting. There's a real art to it. I don't think any team has it mastered yet. It's still a good educated guess. I don't know if our artificial intelligence can somehow turn around and make scouting more accurate, but scouting is educated guesswork. And to look at a kid at 15, 16, 17 and say, yeah, he's going to be an NHLer, that's very difficult to do because you just don't know what things are in the path of these players. A lot of them are so talented at the youngest of ages, but there hasn't been girls yet. There hasn't been booze. There hasn't been high school. There's so many more challenges that are coming their way. We don't know how they're going to react to those challenges and what's going to get in the way of their development. So the forecasting 3 or 4 years down the road, that's the most difficult thing to do.
So we're mostly active on Twitter, and we do got a pretty good sized listener base. And sometimes we get sort of a lot of questions or feedback from especially some younger people, maybe in their mid-20s, even up to age 30. And sometimes, like, we've had Jeff Tuohy on, who is doing some scouting for
Jeff's a friend of mine and a great guy. You couldn't have a better guy on than Jeff Tuohy.
Yeah, and he was gracious enough to come on while we were just starting out. And I think he's still doing scouting with Florida Panthers. But when we had him on and other guests like that, we do get some questions from listeners. And I guess the question would be, for a young person that's looking to become a scout, whatever that means, how do they go about doing it? How do they break into it?
Even if you don't have a scouting job for anybody, start scouting. Be in the arenas. Talk to other scouts. Take your notes. Get experience. Meet people. Let people know you want to scout. And it's like being a hockey player. Work hard. Just work hard.
So if you're scouting players in the OHL for the NHL draft, what qualities in a player sticks out to you the most that gives the best chance of getting drafted?
Well, you know, there's so many darn good hockey players. And, you know, you can look at two guys that at 18 years old, they're, you know, there's not much difference in their game. And one guy goes on to be an NHL star and the other guy can't make it out of the American Hockey League. And I find the biggest difference maker for those players are their character, you know, their belief in themselves, coachability, willingness to work, not just on the ice, but off the ice, go the extra mile. Are you an outlier? Or are you the kid that just, oh, I've got talent. I can take it easy tonight. I can party a little bit more because I'm real good. You know, the guys that make the NHL, you don't have to question their character. They've made it. They, you know, they know what it takes. And so, that's what I look for. And it's not a tangible trait. I mean, you can measure a guy's speed. You can measure how many goals he has. You can measure how many assists he has, how many hits he makes, but you can't measure how bad he wants it, how much work he's willing to do. So I think the good scouts really do a deep dive into a prospect's character to try and, you know, decide whether he forecasts toward the NHL.
Yeah, because we've talked to plenty of coaches, and one of the questions we do is, how do you measure, or can you measure competitiveness, you know, aggressiveness? You can measure hockey IQ through performance, but that competitiveness, yeah. And of course, I'm assuming NHL draft, they have to have all the boxes checked. But if you're a coach, if they sort of, they're on your team, let's just say, and they're sort of lacking, maybe it's, you know, puck control or whatever it might be, but the competitiveness, that drive, yeah. How big is that for a coach? Or is it like, I'd rather have the skills?
No, it's huge for a coach, and coaches will tell you. And I listen to these reels and things like that. I can't tell you the amount of pro coaches that said, give me a 2-star athlete with a 5-star work ethic over a 5-star athlete with a 2-star work ethic any day, and I'll beat you. You know, you have got to go to work, man. And you've got to have that great character. And, you know, you're right on. It's very tough because it's not a quantitative measure. It's a qualitative. You kind of sit there as a scout and you watch and you rely on your years of experience to say, does this kid exemplify the character that we think he needs to move on? But
yeah,
she's a tough one.
What does the future hold for you?
You know what, guys, I had one hockey goal in my life, and that was to become a Canadian university hockey coach and win a Canadian championship. And that happened at 36 years old. So I've been kind of drifting for about 25 years, but quite frankly, I'm really happy with the scouting. I enjoy it. I'm done with the coaching. I know that much. So it's to continue to put good effort into neutral zone, build that company up. And, you know, I'm 63. You know, I figure I got a lot of hockey left in me. We'll see what happens.
Yeah. We'll say goodbye off air, but officially we can't thank you for being generous with your time and talking a little bit about your experiences.
Well, thank you for having me on.